Welcome to Parenting Matters on Nashville Catholic Radio, WBOU 100.5 FM, sponsored by the Family Life Office of the Diocese of Nashville and the Knights of Columbus Council of Hendersonville, Tennessee. Your host for the program is Dr. Parr Donahue. Dr. Parr has years of experience in pediatrics and parenting. He was named the Senior Pediatrician of the Year by the Tennessee Chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics in 2014. Dr. Parr is the author of four books, including books on parenting, entitled Messengers in Denim, The Amazing Things Parents Can Learn from Teens, and Tools for Effective Parenting. Visit Dr. Parr's blog at www.parentingwithdrparr.com. Here's your host, Dr. Parr Donahue.
Welcome to Parenting Matters on WBOU FM 100.5 on your radio dial and streaming throughout the world at WBOU.org. Our subject today, teaching kids about money. Our guest expert is Joseph Budd. Together we will discuss how parents might teach their kids about money. Joe is a seasoned financial manager. This will be a great show. A big welcome to you, Joe, and to you, our listeners. Now my monologue. Software developer J.J. Rosen wrote a column in the Tennessean asking schools to teach five practical courses, one of them on personal finance. In it, he asked high schools to teach the ins and outs of investing, retirement plans, taxes, and debt. I would add simple things like how to open and use a checking account, balance it, and the cost of overdrafts, the danger of overusing credit cards, interest, both good and bad. Good is what comes in, bad's what you pay out, compound interest, and simple interest, stocks, and bonds. Employers tell me that many kids do not know how all this is done or where to find a place to start. We will discuss these and all these other issues and more with our guests, but first let me tell you about some advice I share with teens in my book, Messengers in Denim. I tell teens that as soon as they get their first job at age 14 or 15, before they buy a car, before they buy a cell phone, a new pair of shoes, or save up for a car, they should put the first $2,000 they make into a Roth IRA. Many of my grandkids have done that, and in a few short years, they are all surprised to see the size of their retirement account, and they are so proud to know they did it themselves. An advantage to a Roth IRA is that all the distributions are tax-free. A good friend of mine put $1,000 into an IRA over-the-counter fund in 1985 and has not added anything to it, yet it is now worth over $35,000 even after withdrawing the minimum required distributions for the past 10 years. That over-the-counter fund has averaged 13.68 yearly since it was started some 50 years ago. I show teens a graph telling how much a fund will be worth if they invest $2,000 a year at ages 14, 15, 16, and 17, instead of buying that car. If the fund earns 10% annually, it'll be worth $1 million when they reach 65. No guarantees, of course. Now let's hear from our guest expert, Joe Budd. Joe graduated from Walsh College of Accountancy with a major in finance. He is a certified financial planner, chartered financial consult, and has a master's degree in financial services. Joe is a managing partner with Budd, Malone & Company. They offer securities through LPL Financial Members, FINRA, SIPC. He and his wife, Deanna, have two children, son age 14 and daughter 15 years old. They attend Holy Family Catholic Church. Welcome, Joe, to WBOU 100.5 FM on your dial and streaming throughout the world at WBOU.org. Joe, IRAs are some of my favorite things, but before I ask you about them, why don't you talk to us about some other important things like checking accounts, debit cards, and credit cards?
Glad to be here, Parr. You know, before we get into the details, it's interesting to see what the major sources of information that influence kids in terms of how they learn and think about money. A poll of young people was recently done on Mint.org, a financial education website, and it found that 68% of what kids know about money comes from their parents, 16% from their friends, 14% from the media, and only 1% comes from teachers. And when they ask kids what they ask their parents for money for in the same survey, the biggest need was 40% wanted it for entertainment purposes, 24% wanted it for food, 19% for games, toys, and like a phone, and then 15% was for education, only 1% to charity. You know, checking accounts, they're great learning tools for children. They show them how to balance a hypothetical account and a sample account. I think doing that with a child, even if it's not your own real checking account, setting up a fictional one and going through the process with a child will teach them how that gets done and will be a great springboard to teach them other things. Debit and credit cards, they're great subjects to teach children about as well. And having a discussion with the child about why using a spending and savings plan can help avoid having to use the credit card in the first place. And what we want to do is reinforce caution that if you don't pay your credit card bill in full each month, you're going to be charged a high rate of interest.
Joe, I really was impressed with this statistics that kids learn about their finances from their parents. You said 68%. Is that through the whole spectrum of social economic families?
Yeah, that's a wide cross-section of the United States.
And does it hold out for the rich is the same as the poor?
Right.
Okay. Well, Joe, I'm going to right now go to allowance. Do you think kids should have an allowance?
I do, and I think an allowance is a great tool to teach kids about cash flow. Where does money come from, and what are the required chores to receive that allowance? I think those are great concepts to teach a child. Do we have a plan for saving some of it? This leads into learning the difference between needs and wants. Handling money is all about making choices. Should we save some, spend some, or donate some to charity? They will learn these habits from their parents, really, by watching us in motion, either in instructive form or watching the parents in action. The best way to teach kids about money is by example, and have a structure and guidelines and age-appropriate goals with some accountability and consequences, as well as allowing them to learn from their mistakes. Those mistakes they make, they will never forget, and they'll be life lessons that they'll never forget.
Joe, should kids be required to set some aside for savings or charity? Should that be a requirement of getting an allowance?
I think it's a great way to teach kids the value and power of their saving and their income and what impact that can have on others that have less than they do. Again, they're going to learn from you, and maybe that's an example to share. What charities do you give to, and why do you give to them, and maybe pass that family value down to the children?
Good. Joe, it sort of reminds me that financial education, if you will, is so much similar to sex education. Should you have that big talk? Should you sit down with your kids and diagrams and charts for finance or for sexual stuff? That's important. But more important, I think, is this day-to-day way that you and your wife live, how you treat other people, how you treat women. That's a big one for boys. How do they treat women? Do they treat them like your dad does? They will. So the same thing for girls. They treat their men like their mother treats their dad. So I think it's so important, this day-to-day thing in everything we do as for parents.
I agree.
What about high schoolers? Should they have jobs?
I think it's a great idea to start working. Now, the scale of how much they're going to work is really, I think, a function of how well they adapt academically to the studies that they currently have. It has to be in a level that does not take away a time from academic achievement success, though. There has to be a balance, just like later in life when they become adults, having that work-life balance.
What about stocks and bonds? Do you have any recommendations for kids to follow with stocks and bonds? Now, I know some families where kids have bought Coca-Cola because it was a very important part of their family's life. And I enjoyed talking to them when they came into the office at the age of 12. I said, boy, stock went up today. It was so fun to hear that coming out of kids, but that's what his mom and dad talked about too.
You know, I'm more of a fan of having a diversified start to investing for children and young adults. You want to give them the best chance possible to watch that grow. So I'm a fan of having an index fund that allows them to own commonplace companies that they recognize, like Apple, Microsoft, and Facebook. And that list of companies in the index, when you look at the top 15 or 20 holdings, they're going to recognize almost all those names. As opposed to if you use an individual stock, if it doesn't work out on that one name, it may give them a negative experience. So maybe a combination approach, or at least starting with the lion's share in an index fund, I think is a good idea.
Joe, index fund is a mutual fund. Could you talk to us a little bit about what mutual funds are and how they work?
Yeah, mutual funds are investment companies. They're a diversified investment company that pool investors' money together, and they're managed but with a specific objective, such as long-term growth or income. And mutual funds can be either passive, where they're mimicking an index that we just talked about, or they can be actively managed, where the fund objective may be to find companies with high earnings growth, and you have people scouring research trying to build that portfolio according to that objective. So you can have active and passive mutual funds.
What about balanced funds? What are they?
You know, a balanced fund is going to have a combination of stocks and bonds in them. And one a good example of a balanced fund are these target date funds that they offer in retirement plans, like a 2050 fund. When you take your date of birth to like when you're going to be 65 or 60, doing that quick addition gives you something that's going to get more conservative as time goes on. But a balanced fund would have stocks and bonds in it, and a cash equivalent, and have some type of objective.
We're talking about companies going public. I just saw that Chewy, which my daughter uses for her dogs, went public yesterday, and we all should have bought it and sold it today. But what does it mean when a company goes public? What happens? What is that?
That's when a company takes their private company and issues shares to the investing public, and it's now available to investors that want to do that.
Joe, is it possible for me to open some stocks and sell my company to you or shares and stuff?
It is. It's a long process to do that. It's expensive to do, and it takes time to put that all together. Mm-hmm. It's all there's a whole legal maze that you mm-hmm. have to go through to do that.
Okay. When teens get jobs, I remember the first job my grandson had, one of them had, when he started work for a company. He got a check and says, "Grandpa, they took almost half my money." Could you talk to us a little bit about that, and how do you prepare kids for that, or just let them learn?
I think it's great to explain it to them, because they need to know that you know. And regarding paychecks, discussing the difference between gross pay and net pay, and explain why it's set up that way in our country, and what does that money go towards that's withheld from your paycheck. It's an opportunity to take advantage of the convenience of direct deposit, too, if they're getting a paycheck, into the child's bank account, out of sight, out of mind. I think that's a great idea. You can add positive comments with them, watching that pay go directly into the savings and having that discipline, giving them positive reinforcement. You know, son, I'm proud of you that you're doing the direct deposit. It's a nice way to build the nest egg, and that's going to be a nice memory for them. And then come up with, like, ask them how long it will take them to save $500 or $1,000 based on their weekly take-home pay, and get them to think about creating that nest egg and how long it's going to take.
Develop the habit of saving.
Mm-hmm.
Joe, this has been so interesting talking with you. We have some time left. Why don't you tell us what else we should know?
Yeah, I think that you can have fun with this by creating, like, a savings goal with your children. And I did this, offer them a matching program. And I did that with my daughter when she's saving for a car. And, I'll put up X percent of whatever you save. And in this case, I put up 100% of what she saved.
Mm-hmm.
So with no limit on purchasing that first car, and letting her know that I'm committed if she's committed. And I think that's a great way of doing that. Have fun with it, though, teaching and learning. When you go places, point out examples of good choices and bad choices in situations. Also, when they're getting to be teenagers, thinking about a car, I think, is a good thing. And, when you're doing that and you point these things out, they're going to remember that when they're on their own shopping. And I think another thing to teach kids about is interest, like simple and compound interest. There's a great calculator at www.investor.gov to show kids how compound interest works. It helps demonstrate the concept that compound interest occurs when you earn interest on both the money you save and the interest your account earns. You might also want to discuss how much they can reasonably save. What will he or she have to give up in return for that savings? Is it worth it? Is it a good trade-off? And then use numbers that are meaningful to them on that calculator. So if they're trying to save for a car and they're trying to save $5,000, how long would it take at different rates of interest? I think it's a good thing to do.
You know, I made that offer to my grandkids that I would match whatever they saved. Well, it soon got out of hand. I have 14 grandkids. So after a couple of years, I decided I better put a limit on that because it got away from me. What are some other good choices kids can make besides buying cars?
I think coming up with a habit of saving. It's that frugal attitude that you want to exemplify in your kids. And, you know, I've been doing this for 20 years. And what is very interesting, Par, over the years, is if I have a client that's in their 60s and they're a great saver their entire life, it didn't start when they started working. They've been a good saver their entire life. And I ask them how they got to be a great saver. And they will give me stories about what their mom, their dad, or their grandparents taught them over the years. So those statistics that we talked about at the beginning, those impressions in their minds stay with them. And you know how our kids will follow our habits, both good and bad? It's the same thing with a savings thing. Because they're going to say, I knew you would say that I should save this. Mm-hmm. I knew you would think this was a good choice. So I think teaching those habits, and if they're going to be frugal when they're 15, they're going to be frugal when they're 50, but in a smart way.
It reminds me of, I have a granddaughter who got her license, and we were riding with her, and we got home. My wife said, you are such a good driver. And she said, well, why wouldn't that be? My mother's a good driver. My dad's a good driver. I think that hits it right on the head. They do what we do. Joel, before we started talking, you told me about a website that people could go to help set up a program to teach their kids about finances.
There's a webinar that I do called Kids and Money.
Mm-hmm.
And it's available on our company's website. If you want to register for that, it's like an on-demand view it. And it's about a half hour, and it covers a lot of these concepts.
Mm-hmm.
And in that material, there's also a handout that you can download. And it's an allowance checklist. And there's a lot of websites that are on this handout that are part of that webinar.
Joe, could you give me that, and I'll copy that onto my website?
Sure.
Because that's even the address for your company that you gave me before, it's 12 pages long.
Well, yeah, those URLs for those links for the webinar, it's budmalone.com, BUDDMELONE.com.
Mm-hmm.
And under the events section, we'll list the link there for the webinar, and it's an on-demand thing.
Good.
And it's about a half hour, but I think you'll find it, and you can watch it as many times as you want. Mm-hmm. And the handout for the allowance checklist is going to be there. So I think that's something that you'll find helpful.
What else can you teach us?
I think one of the other concepts, too, is when you're shopping with your children, you know, comparison price shop. And explain to your children, there's things that you comparison price shop on, and sometimes there's things that you maybe are a little less sensitive to doing that on. I think that's a good habit to teach children. With the internet now and all this information, you could spend a Saturday rainy afternoon sitting down and say, what else are you interested in? And show them three different ways you can compare that. Explain the concept of a membership warehouse to them. You know, when you get older and you have your own kids, if you're going to go through, and you have four or five kids, you're going to go through more than 1 gallon of milk during the week.
No kidding.
How can we get more of that at a cheaper price? I think that's a great concept. Planning ahead for a vacation fund. If the child wants to save for a new computer or wants to go someplace special with the family. If we go to this location, is there anything you want to do? Yes, I want to buy this and this when I'm there. Well, how much does it cost? How many weeks do we have to the trip? And try to make fun with it. And you can even go with a matching program there too. You know, like a Lego World was an experience my son went to. And there was something that was only available at Lego World. And he knew all about it, but he didn't know how much it cost. So we found out how much it cost. And then after we fainted, okay, we said, gee, okay, maybe you can do some chores around the house. And, you know, he started washing our cars and things like that, and we would pay him and he'd put it away. And just seeing the earnestness in him wanting to do that, he loves pleasing you from a parent to son relationship, but at the same point, he also wants you to be proud of him for achieving those goals. So I think that's another good lesson. Yeah. About saving.
Joe, one time my wife and I were talking about one of our sons, and she said, or I said, well, I think that you know, he just sort of has a knack for saving money, just sort of built in. And I said, why'd you save that? Well, I said, remember one time when your mother was down, and he was only 5 years old, and they went to the store. And he, Grandma bought something, and he said, how much does that cost, Grandma? He said, well, you don't need to know that. Well, how much did it cost? I want to know. So finally, she says, well, it cost $5 or whatever it was. He says, I saw another store yesterday for $4.
I love that. I think the other concept you can teach kids, too, and it'll go a long way, teach them the concept of inflation. Tell them how much your first car cost. Tell them how much a gallon of gas was when you started driving. And I think those concepts, and show them that over the course of time, what's the price of that cost of a car today, and take a spreadsheet and show in 20 years what that same car is going to cost at 3% inflation. And it really gets them to think about, gee, I do have to put money away. I do have to save for a rainy day, because the cost of everything is going to go up each year.
Well, you're so right. I had a neighbor boy help me with some yard work last week, and it came time to pay him. I said, well, how much do you want? He said, well, that's up to you. I said, well, when I was your age and doing what you did, I earned 50 cents an hour. He said, 50 cents an hour? I said, so I'll give you a buck. He said, a buck? He said, but when you were my age, 50 cents was worth a lot more than it is today. And I says, you're totally right. So I paid him a lot more, but not too much for all the good work he did. Joe, one of the major things that kids are concerned with is their college, and do they need to know how much college is going to cost, and how can they finance it, and all those kind of things, what kind of a school they should go to. When do you think that parents should start talking to them about that, and when should kids start doing something about that?
I think a good age to start thinking about college with and talking about those concepts with your children is really around age 13. You know, they're old enough. They're probably out of grammar school, they're in middle school, and letting them know the importance of the choices they make over the next, you know, 6 years of their life are going to have lifelong ramifications. Not on a stress them out standpoint, but just teach them the roles that, you know, when you get into high school, those grades are going to be looked at for all kinds of opportunities. And then think about the conversation of where you might want to go to college, and have a discussion on how much you as a parent can contribute to college tuition and expenses each year. It really has a huge magnitude of impact on children when they realize, how am I going to come up with this, and how much are mom and dad going to help me with, and the rest of it's my responsibility. You don't want to have the child, you know, stress out too much about it, but you want them to have skin in the game, is what I like to say. Have them research the availability of scholarships, loans and grants available from the government and other sources. Compare the college costs, graduation rates, loan default rates, employment prospects. There's a good website called College Scorecard, and it's www.collegecost.ed.gov/scorecard. Sorry about the URL. And then the paying for college tool to compare financial and aid offers, you can go to consumerfinance.gov for that. But I think looking at the cost of college is an important thing. And the other thing that I'm really a big fan of is the U.S. government has a U.S. labor database that you can access online, and you can see what careers are going to have a high demand. And if they specifically look at their skill set and how you can apply them to careers that have a high demand career means they won't have a problem getting a job when they get out of school, and teaching them that it is a job market and to study a skill that will be in demand.
Okay, that's very good advice, Joy. I know some kids that go to college and they take these crazy, crazy majors when there are no jobs out there. And to think you graduated from college after 4 or sometimes 5 years, and you can't get a job and you get this big debt behind you. I think that U.S. News and World Report had a paper out a few years ago, and they talked about what majors are the biggest waste of money. And one was police force work. Mm-hmm. Because you can get a job right out of high school with the police, and they mm-hmm. send you to college, they send you to whatever you need to learn. And the other one was philosophy, and there are no jobs for that. Those that do are in religious film, they don't pay anything. Isn't that right? And so I think that those kind of things really don't make any sense to have a degree in them.
No, they have to have a plan of action, and getting that those good choices at a young age will put them on a trajectory to start thinking about it earlier rather than later.
When my kids were going to college, the big thing for girls to study was fashion design. Like, wow, we need them. And I knew a girl who went to college, she wanted to, and she majored in Italian because she wanted to move to Rome and start a wedding service. Like, give me a break. Well, thank you, Joe. It's time to wrap this up. It's been a great pleasure talking with you on WBLU FM 100.5 on your dial and streaming throughout the world at WBLU.org. Before I sign off, one quick story. One of our sons had a bike riding early morning paper route in bitter cold Wisconsin. He rode that bike through snow and ice and sleet at 5 o'clock in the morning, and I worried about him a lot. But he made enough money to buy that bike. After he bought it, I said, now, Sean, you can quit that job. He says, no. I said, well, what are you saving for now? He said, well, I want to go skiing in Colorado. I said, I don't think a 14-year-old boy can go skiing alone in Colorado. That's so far from home. He looked at me with disgust and said, Dad, you could come with me. Well, I did. A year later, we were skiing in Colorado. We had a great time. He learned the value of work, having a goal, and saving, and he hasn't stopped working or saving since. And I learned never to underestimate what a determined kid can do. Now here's your homework. Get your family together and go to my website, www.parenting-matters.com. Click on audio blog tag and listen to this show with your kids. Then listen to Joe's webinar at this really big, long URL. And I will have that on my site. You can look that up. And then return to my site, click on homework, and tell our readers what your family thought. And if you have a subject that you would like us to discuss on Parenting Matters, add it to your comments. We'll make every effort to find an expert to discuss it on a show. Thanks for listening, and may God continue to bless you and your family.
Thank you for listening to another edition of Parenting Matters with Dr. Parr Donahue. Parenting Matters is produced and recorded inside the studios at the Catholic Pastoral Center. Thanks again for listening to WBOU 100.5 FM and streaming at WBOU.org.